Tonight, we'll be looking at other passages of Scripture, but we'll be coming back to Job, and so you may want to put your finger or a bookmark there as we study together. We'll start in Job chapter 1 in just a little bit. Based upon your previous studies of the Old Testament, if I were to ask you to describe Job in one word, what word would you use? I imagine overwhelmingly everybody would choose the word patience. The New Testament tells us that, doesn't it? But if I pressed you further and said, well, that's true, Job should be remembered in one word as patient, but what's another word? You might say faith. Job was a man of faith, and he was certainly that. Job demonstrates that faith doesn't have to have all of the answers even. There was a lot going on in Job's life, a lot that God was doing or allowing to transpire in his life for which Job had no answers, but he still maintained his faith. But tonight I want to talk about Job and another word, another singular word that could describe Job, and that's the word character. Job was a man of character. My clicker's not working back here, guy. There we go. Oh, now it's working too good. That's me there. Job was a man of character. The word character and its synonym, integrity, speaks really to the heart of who a person is. The word character has been defined by some this way, by saying your reputation is what people think about you, but your character is who you truly are. Someone else has defined character this way, that character is who and what you are when nobody's looking. We could add an addendum to that. Character is what you are when nobody but God is looking. Character describes your innermost being, really the heart and the core of who you are. And therefore, character is integral to our lives. We cannot be anything close to what God would have us to be. And truly being His children, a part of His kingdom and of His body, unless we are men and women of character. Like Job. And so tonight I'd like to learn three lessons on the subject of character as we look and examine the life of Job. The first thing, and maybe the most obvious point that we can learn about character from Job, is that when we're faced with adversity, and certainly Job was he not? That when we're faced with adversity, we must maintain our character. If you've turned in Job chapter 1, notice how the book begins. Job 1, verse 1, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was blameless and upright, one who feared God and shunned evil. What a wonderful introduction. By inspiration, that's how Job is introduced to us. Be honest with yourself in this little spiritual exercise for just a moment. If there were a book of the Bible titled The Book of Ken, how would God introduce me? If there was a book of the Bible with your name as its title, that God said, I want to write another book of the Bible and I want to write it about you, how would God introduce you? Would He say that you're upright and blameless, one who feared God and shunned evil? We know the story that Satan, with the angels of the sons of God, Satan makes his appearance before God, and God again, notice how he describes the character of Job. Job chapter 1 again, and skip down just a little bit to where it says the sons of, in verse 6, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came among them, and the Lord said to Satan, from where do you come? So Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro on the earth and from walking back and forth in it. Then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job, that there's none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, and one who fears God and shuns evil?" God, from his very mouth, describes Job as being blameless and upright. But we know what happens, don't we? Satan leaves the presence of God, and with God's permission, he is able to strike down the family of Job in an utterly devastating way. You remember how the news came in an undulating fashion, just one right after another. One messenger would be interrupted by the next messenger, bringing devastating news that this child has died, that child has died. You've lost your flocks, you've lost your wealth, you've lost everything. And yet, notice in chapter 2 how Job is described in verse 3. After all of that has transpired, the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job, that there's none like him in all the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil, and still he holds fast to his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without cause?" Two things I want you to notice in comparison to the first way that God describes Job to Satan and the second way. The first thing you want to notice is that they're virtually identical. That Job was the same man before adversity struck that he was after adversity struck. That's very telling. But there is one difference in God's description of Job before adversity and his description of Job after adversity, and that is, after the adversity, God mentions the character or the integrity of Job. Robert Freeman said, "Character is not made in a crisis, it's merely revealed." The character or the integrity of Job is now fully and for everyone to see. His character is now fully revealed. Satan had said, "Oh, Job's just serving you because you've set a hedge around him. You're protecting him. Take all these things away and he'll curse you to your face." And God says, "No, this is who Job really is." Because character reveals who we really are. If you want to know who somebody really is, not who they claim to be, not the face, the persona that they put on, who they really are, you don't need to see them on their best day. You need to see them on their worst day. That's when character is revealed. How are you on your bad days? Not how are you on your good days. It's easy to be good on your good days, isn't it? How are you on your bad days? You have bad days, don't you? You have devastatingly bad days. Sometimes they're bad in the sense of just heartbreak, death, sorrow, but sometimes they're just bad because the circumstances of life just kind of seem to be kicking you in the teeth and nothing goes right. You ever had a day like that where nothing goes right? Tell you about a day I had several years ago when Dieter and I were first married. We lived in Cullman and I worked in Decatur. And as I was driving to work one day, I was pulling in the parking lot of where I worked, and as I pulled into the parking lot, my car just died. All the lights on the dash came up, and the car just died, but I was able to coast in a little bit. And I thought, well, what am I going to do here? I'm going to be at work all day, and my car's dead. And so there was a garage across the street, and so I called them and said, told them what had happened. My car died in the parking lot. Could they send somebody to tow it across the street to the garage? And I thought, if it works out just right, they can work on it, 8-hour work day, and maybe they'll have it done by the time that I'm through. And that's what they said could be done. And so they pulled it over there. They called me and they said the timing belt broke. And when the timing belt broke, it breaks. It just shuts it all down. But it's a simple procedure. Put a new timing belt on it, and you'll be good to go. We should have it done by the time you leave work this afternoon. I thought, well, that, other than the expense, that'll work out pretty good. But things don't always work out that good, do they? And so, later in the afternoon, getting kind of close to quitting time, I thought, well, I'll call and check up on him. And they said, well, Mr. Chapman, we run into a little bit of a problem. It's still the timing belt, but we had to have a special tool, and Ford is the only one that has that tool, and we're having to get that from the dealer. It's taking a little bit longer to get that, and so we'll get your car fixed, but it won't be by the time you get off work. It'll be closer to probably about 6 o'clock. And that was 3 hours after I got off work, and I thought, well, that's inconvenient. What am I going to do for 3 hours? But it just so happened I had a good friend who lived in Coleman who worked at the same place. And so I went to him and I said, Brad, can you do me a favor? Brad was working at 6. And I told him what had happened. I said, can we trade keys? I'll drive your car home and you can pick up my car because it'll be done by the time you get off work, and you drive my car home and we can switch tomorrow. Brad was a good friend, so he didn't even hesitate. Sure, be glad to. Here, take the keys. So I took his keys, drove his car back to Coleman. But again, I got to thinking, what if? And so I picked up the phone about 5:30, called the shop and said, are things going okay with my car? Is it going to be ready? My friend's going to pick it up instead of me. And they said, well, no, we've run into another problem, and we can fix it, but it's not going to be done today. It'll have to be tomorrow. And I thought, oh, now Brad is without a car. He's struck. He's stranded. And so I said, I don't have any choice. I got to drive all the way back to Decatur to pick up my friend because he's stranded from doing me a good favor. And so I said, Deidre, you want to ride along with me? Blake, our son, who's now 28, who was just a baby at the time, we strapped him in the car seat and strapped him in the back of Brad's car and started driving up the interstate. It was the month of July, really hot that day. We're driving up the interstate to Decatur, and a little light popped on Brad's car, and it was overheating. Steam started bellowing out of the hood of Brad's car. And I thought, oh, great. Just what I need. Now I'll tear up Brad's car. So I pulled Brad's car over on the side of the interstate and sat there, and steam was just a-bellowing. And we waited and waited a while, and finally somebody stopped and picked me up and gave me a ride to the next exit where I could get some water. And I got some jugs of water, borrowed and stole every jug I could get, some jugs of water and some antifreeze. Walked all the way back down the interstate exit, back down the side of the interstate, got down there and put all that back into Brad's car and drove it on into Decatur. This was before the time of cell phones, so I had no way to get a hold of Brad to tell him what had happened. And so I get back to our place of business where we both worked, and it's now closed. And Brad's gone. Well, where did he go? I've got his car. And so, but there was nothing to do. So I got to the payphone, called his house, and his mother answered. And I said, is Brad there? And she said, no, he's probably on his way home from work. And I said, no, he's not, because I got his car. And she said, well, I don't know where he is. So I said, told Deidre, I said, well, we're just going to have to wait till I call. I'm not leaving till I find out where Brad is. And so every few minutes I'd call. Brad home yet? No, he's not home yet. Brad home yet? Finally, he answered the phone. I said, Brad, what happened? He said, well, our boss let me borrow his car because you weren't there. So I had to drive his car home. And I thought, now we got 3 cars. But okay, at least it's over. It's about 8 o'clock at night by this time. So I told Deidre, I said, wait a minute, we're not getting on the interstate till I get plenty of water. So we got all those jugs, we filled them back up full of water, put that whole trunk of his car was full of jugs of water and antifreeze. I was ready to go. Slammed the trunk of that car, got in the car at 8 o'clock. I remember I got off work at 3. 8 o'clock, got in, there was the baby. Blake had been crying, the baby had been crying the whole time. It's hot, and Deidre sitting in the seat. I said, let's go home. And then I looked over at Deidre and I said, please tell me you got the keys. No. Guess where they were? In the trunk with them jugs of water. You ever have a day like that? That's when you find out who you really are. That's when you find out when your character, just really, what type of person am I? You know, our faith, look in the book of James chapter 1. Our faith is tested by trials. James chapter 1, James tells us this in a curious statement about the way that we view trials. James 1 verse 6 says, but let him ask in faith with no doubting, He who doubts is like a wave of the sea, tossed to and fro. For let not that man suppose he'll receive anything from the Lord. He's a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. There's this double-minded, unstable man. But yet earlier, he's going to tell us how we can be not unstable and not double-minded, but to be men and women of character. Back up a couple of verses to verse 2 when he says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience." Now, why would James say, count it all joy when you have a bad day? Count it all joy when the world kicks you in the teeth. Count it all joy when adversity and hardship comes against you. Because he says, that's the testing of your faith. That's how you know what you're made of. God said to Satan about Job after the worst day of his life, still, he holds fast his integrity. The next thing we learn from Job about character is that when we are tempted to do otherwise, we must be men and women of character. Turn back with me to the book of Job, this time to Job chapter 2. Second round has now happened to Job. Remember, in the first round, he lost all of his earthly possessions, which were many. Worse than that, he lost all of his children in one day. Round 2, his health is now taken away from him. He's stricken with disease, and when we find him, we pick up the story, he's sitting on a pile of ashes and has a broken piece of pottery, and just for the little relief he can get is to scrape the open sores on his flesh. And then his wife comes to him. Someone has said, now, please understand, I would never say this. Somebody else said this. That Job was the most afflicted man that ever lived because he lost his wealth, he lost his children, he lost his health, but he kept his wife. And that sounds like a sexist statement when you just say it like that, but it's not, but it's true, isn't it? Because she was anything but a helpmeet to him. Look what she says in Job chapter 2. And in verse 9, his wife comes to him and says, "Do you still hold fast to your integrity, to your character?" Look at her advice. Curse God and die. The one who should have been the greatest consoler, the greatest encourager, the one who should have come and put her arm around his neck and say, "I'm so sorry, Job. Hand me a piece of that pottery and let me scrape with you. Don't give up, Job. We'll get through this somehow." But that's not what she does. That's not what she says. She says, "Job, give up. Curse God and die." But look at verse 10. Now, in what we don't know, what the Bible doesn't tell us, is how much, if any time, transpired between verse 9 and verse 10. But I imagine, based upon what we know about Job, that it wasn't a long period of time, that he didn't sit there and contemplate what she offered as a real viable option. What you know about Job, I don't think you think that either. I think Job almost immediately said, "You speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God? Shall we not accept adversity?" And the text says then, "In all this, Job did not sin with his lips." Job says, "You are being foolish." No. when life's at its worst, and when you're being tempted to do otherwise. And let's be honest, temptation doesn't always come from the seediest of characters. Sometimes the most difficult temptation comes from the ones who's closest to us, from our friends, from our family, even at sometimes from our own brethren. Just like the toughest temptation Job faced came from his own wife. But when we're tempted to do otherwise, we must maintain our character. Just as adversity reveals our character, temptation reveals our character too, doesn't it? That's when we see what we're really made of. When we're really tempted to sin. Hold your finger in the book of Job. Go back to the book of James again. This time in James chapter 1. James chapter 1 and in verse 12. James 1:12 says this, "Blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been approved, he'll receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to those that love Him." Have you ever observed in that verse that James says the crown of life, which is kind of in the middle of that verse, that he says the crown of life is promised to two different groups of individuals? He says at first part of the verse that the crown of life is promised to those who endure temptation. But the last part of the verse, he says, no, wait a minute, that crown of life's already been promised to somebody else. It's been promised to those that love the Lord. We understand that James is not saying God made a mistake and promised the crown of life to two different sets of people. We see James connecting those two, don't we? Blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been approved, he'll receive the crown of life that the Lord promised to those that love him. Is James not making a connection between overcoming temptation and loving the Lord? Now, I understand this is one of those things easier said than done, but what James is saying is that temptation, whether we give in or overcome, temptation is simply a choice. Do we choose that thing by which we are tempted, that sin, or do we choose God? Another way of phrasing it, James says, is do we love that sin and that temptation more than we love God? Again, easier said than done, but overcoming temptation is nothing simpler than just making a choice. I love God more than I love that thing. Job loved God more than he loved the relief that he might get from the anguish that he was in. He loved God more than he loved his own wife. You know, what you think about, you do. And what you do, you become. Life is full of choices. The question is, will we let our character be made known when the choice to sin is placed before us? Our third and last lesson from Job on the subject of character and helping us to be men and women of character is that when everybody else gives up and gives in, we must still let our character shine. Back to the book of Job, this time in chapter 21. The rest of the chapter, or the rest of the book of Job, is a series of discussions, really, between Job and his friends. They come to him, and at first they're good friends because they don't say anything. Somebody, again, has said that only men could do that. Come sit for a week and not say a word. But it was good. It got bad when they started talking. Because they tried to help Job understand what was going on, and they just really made the circumstances worse. But back and forth they're debating. Job's talking to his friends, trying to figure out what's going on. Why is this happening? I'm a good guy. And why is this happening to me? And notice in chapter 21 what Job observes about what's happening to other people. Job chapter 21, start the reading in verse 7. Why do the wicked live and become old? Yes, become mighty in power. Their descendants are established with them in their sight, and their offspring before them. Pause there. What had happened to Job's descendants? Job's offspring. They're gone. But he looks out his window and he sees these wicked, ungodly people, and they're not having the hard times Job is having. Verse 9, their houses are safe from fear. Neither is the rod of God upon them. Their bull breeds without failure. Their cow calves without miscarriage. They send forth their little ones like a flock, and their children dance. They sing to the tambourine and harp and rejoice to the sound of the flute. Job could look out his window and see wicked person after wicked person. And they seem to prosper. And Job look at himself and say, I'm upright, I'm blameless, I fear God and I shun evil. And look what's happened to me. But remember, the book still says in all of this, Job did not sin with his lips. You ever feel like Job? Like you keep doing it the right way and the world punishes you for that? And you see somebody else who's dishonest in their business dealings and they get rewarded for that. Somebody who's not the father or mother they ought to be to their children, and the world doesn't care about that. But you're doing what's right, and nobody appreciates it. Nobody sees it. Nobody gives you a medal or a prize for it. In fact, you get ridiculed, made fun of, persecuted. Job forever stands as an example of patience, faith, and character to tell us that if you're the only one, keep doing what's right. Oh, it's hard to swim upstream. It's hard to be different than the world. But you can do it. Let me illustrate it this way. Several years ago, I was holding a meeting. I forget where it was, but I was flying. And you know, if you fly out of Alabama, it's some kind of law you have to go through Atlanta to get wherever you're going to get. And that's the way it was this time. My flight connected in Atlanta and then was going off somewhere else out west. And I can remember that looking at my connections that I wasn't going to have much time in Atlanta. That when, by the time my flight landed and the time that it was going to take off, wasn't a big window. And so I knew I was going to have to hurry from my arrival gate to my departure gate. And so I had gotten my bags ready. I was in the running position. I was ready to go. And I firmly believe that there is somebody, that, in fact, probably a whole office somewhere in the Delta Airlines organization, whose simple job is to make sure that your arrival gate and your departure gate are as far away as possible. That when it first gets put in the computer, if you're landing at gate 8B and supposed to take off at gate 8D, somewhere somebody goes, oh, no, we can't have that. He's arriving at gate 8B, then he needs to depart gate 23Z. And that's the way it was that day. My gate was way on the other side of the Atlanta airport. And it just so happened the day that I was transferring in the Atlanta airport that the entire population of the state of Georgia was there that day. And it was crowded. And I was in a hurry. And I had my satchel with my Bible and my sermon outlines in one hand. I had my little carry-on bag in the other hand. And I was going through that airport, and you might guess by looking at me that I can't just slip through a crowd real easily. And I was bumping and running into people. Pardon me, excuse me, excuse me, pardon me. And I may be exaggerating this next part just slightly, but not much. That day, when I was going that way in the Atlanta airport, the entire population of the state of Georgia was going that way in the Atlanta airport. And I was pushing and going through there. And I'm going to be honest with you, it occurred to me more than once that I could, even as big as I am, I could have just turned around and done this and they'd have pushed me through the airport in the direction they were going. And it had been so much easier. I don't know where they were going, but I'd just go with them. You ever feel that way spiritually? That you're going that way and everybody else is going that way. And you get tired. And if you're honest, at your darkest and lowest moments, you've thought about it, haven't you? It'd be easier to just turn around and go with them. But Job stands as testimony that when everybody else gives up and gives in, you be a man and woman of character. Job forever teaches us that it's not our circumstances, it's not our peers, it's not our friends, our family, it's nobody else determines our character but us. We can be men and women of character when everything and everyone else around us is doing otherwise. We can be men and women of character when we're tempted, and even by those closest to us sometimes, to give in to sin. And we can be men and women of character not just on our best and brightest day, but on our worst and darkest day. We talked the other day about that judgment scene in the book of Revelation, where it says that the dead, great and small, stood before the throne, and it says the books were opened. And one of those books is identified as the book of life, but it said books, plural. And it says that those would be judged by what was written in the book. Remember, we said, what if there was a book written about you? The book written about Job said he was upright, blameless, feared God, and shunned evil. And we said, what if there was a book written about you? God says there is. What's written on those pages? Well, he's had some hard days. He's had a rough life. She's faced a lot of temptation. She had to swim upstream most of her life. But she, like Job, maintained their integrity. And they were men and women of character. May God bless you. May God help you to be men and women of character. The world needs more. God needs more. People like Job who won't let anything dissuade them from the righteous path that they should be on. Would you become a Christian tonight? The wonderful thing about that book that might contain all of those deeds, so many of which we're ashamed of, is that the blood of Christ can cleanse every page and we can begin anew in writing pages of character and godliness and faithfulness. Would you become a child of God this evening? Would you repent of your sins if you're an erring child of God and come back to Him and say, God, please forgive me for my character flaws, but bless me and help me to live as a man or woman of character from this day forward. If we can help you in any spiritual way, let it be known right now, as together we stand.